Hi there, and welcome to another episode of the 33 Fuel podcast. My name is Warren. I'm one of the co-founders at 33 Fuel, and it gives me great pleasure to be your host today for this episode with Nigel Mitchell. Nigel is an elite level sports nutritionist who has been at the top of his game for a long time now. Formerly, he was head of nutrition at Team GB Cycling, where he fueled an awful lot of medals. He was also head of nutrition at Team Sky, where he fueled several Grand Tour wins. And today you'll find him as head of nutrition at EF Cycling, also on the World Tour circuit. So when it comes to cycling, when it comes to elite performance, and when it comes to balancing the nutritional demands and requirements for the highest levels of performance in those sports, Nigel has pretty much been there, done that, cooked the dinner, and also he's written the book about it. And in this, Nigel will be our first guest on the show who has a book out. But don't worry, unlike some of these occasions where podcast guests happen to have a book out, and you get the impression that maybe they're kind of just doing a bit of a circuit and hashing out the same old quotes for everyone, this is absolutely not the case here. And it's really why I'm so excited to have Nigel on the show here, because even though he's at the top of his game, unlike some people who can reach the top of their field and can become just a little more resistant to new ideas or simply a little more firmly entrenched in the established positions that they've known as they've worked their way up, Nigel is quite the opposite. He knows what is required right now for the best possible performance, but he has such an open and inquiring mind. He never stops looking for the next thing that can help his athletes take themselves to the next stage. And this book that Nigel has out now, it is called The Plant-Based Cyclist Book. So we're going to be looking a lot at a plant-based diet. But the other great thing here is that whereas until quite recently, and even still now, a lot of the discussion around diets, whether it be keto, whether it be paleo, whether it be even the carnivore diet or the plant-based diet, it can become a little bit polemic, a little bit black and white. You have to be all this or all that. And I don't think that that has to be the case, and Nigel's approach here is a very real world one. All he sees is that there is an advantage in a plant-based diet, not exclusively for everyone, and it might not even work for some people at all, but incorporating some of it could be a big benefit to a number of athletes out there. And because of that, he went on a deep dive himself, subjecting himself to a 3-month completely strict vegan diet so he could learn more. Along the way, he was talking with more athletes, investigating more things, trying more recipes and experimenting. The results are what come out in this book, which is a simple and excellent toolkit for you to be able to incorporate more of a plant-based diet into your own eating habits so that you can get more of a performance gain. So if you're looking for a absolutely non-dogmatic view of the benefits and even the pitfalls of a plant-based diet and how you can incorporate that with your performance, you have come to exactly the right place. Because really, sharing this kind of leading edge information so that athletes can be the best they can possibly be, that is our mission at 33 Fuel. And we do that with these podcasts with great people like Nigel. We do it on our vlog. We do it across our social media. And of course, we do it every single day in store at 33fuel.com, where you will find the world's finest natural sports nutrition for high performance. So look, do go over to the store and get yourself stocked up. There's plenty to enjoy there, but not before you have enjoyed this conversation with Nigel Mitchell. Nigel Mitchell, thank you very much for coming to join us this morning and packing this into your schedule for a bit of fun about plant-based cycling.
Okay, yeah, nice to speak as usual, Warren.
It certainly is, and I thought we'd. I know you're fairly pushed for time, so I thought we'd dive straight in. I think you are a watershed on our podcast, Nigel. You are the first person coming on with a book. You have.
Oh right.
You are our first book based guest because your book, The Plant Based Cyclist, is just out now, available in all good bookshops and all that stuff. But the big reason that we'd spoken about this before and I really wanted to get you on the show is that I think as plant-based eating, veganism, as it becomes more popular, it can become more polarized. And I think that's the natural cause of it having been driven initially, particularly in sport, by people who led a movement based on their strong beliefs and experiences. And those people who led that movement were very all or nothing. None of them were going to go and suddenly start eating a bacon sandwich the next day. It was all plants or all meat. You were one camp or the other. And I think as it grows, that's not necessarily the case. And that's what I found most interesting about your book, because you're not necessarily saying, certainly from your own performance and personal viewpoint, that everyone should be plant-based. You simply see an advantage in it. And I just think there's a very interesting discussion here about it doesn't have to be polarized. It's wherever you can find a nutritional advantage as an athlete, no?
Yeah, I think that that's a really good and intelligent analysis, Warren. So you've obviously been thinking about it and doing your own work. But I think one of the things I've just got to say to begin with, that the book isn't available everywhere. We've purposefully been quite focused with it in that it's only available on the GCN website, and it is available on Amazon. But we're trying to keep it like this so that there's more of a funneling of how the book's distributed. And the other thing to say, which has absolutely amazed me, in that when we started with this as a project, we just didn't know what the interest would be. And so we went for a conservative run of 5,000 books, and they've basically all been sold in the first month. So GCN are just actually doing another print run of 3,000 books at the moment, which is a phenomenal interest, really, in something that's so niche. So I think that that type of response almost answers the initial question and discussion piece, is that what we've done is we've put something together that's unbiased, that is there to meet the needs of people who are not necessarily wanting to be real hardcore vegans. And I don't really like that term, because it makes it sound like these people are really extreme, and that's not really the case. But it's really looking at that group of individuals that are looking to either cut animal foods out or reduce them, and they're wanting to know how they can do it in the best possible way that meets their requirements as a cyclist. And one of the things I found interesting that after we launched the book is I've had emails from people who are looking at the book, not because they're actually cyclists, but because they're physically active sports people that are just interested and think that they can take some things from the book and use it within their own lives and their own programs.
Because so much of your background has been so involved in cycling at world tour level and Olympic level over the last 20 years, but you've also worked across a huge number of other sports at the highest level. And it makes sense that this would be a cycling book, but at the same time, there must be some crossover, because I guess one of the differences I see with your book, apart from the fact it's not about you must eat one way or another, it's like, if you want to explore this, here's a really good way to do it. But with the caveat, you're doing that not just from an enjoying your food point of view, but from making sure that you're looking after your performance as someone who's looking for, you know, increased physical gain.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be quite careful with some of my messaging, in that what I'm not convinced with, where what some people try and promote, is that going on plant-based is going to enhance somebody's performance. It can do, and I'll qualify my statement in a second. And the way that it could enhance somebody's performance, in that their old diet that they were following may have been suboptimal. So they may have been on omnivore type of diet, but because maybe they weren't thinking about what they were doing, that there may have been gaps in it, in particular around some of the micronutrients that we get from plants and vegetables. Now, by going on to much more of a plant-based diet, if people are really considering what they're eating, then they will automatically look at increasing the vegetables within the diet, where we're then getting a lot more of the micronutrients within that. The problem can be, though, that if people are not really thinking about and looking at the foods, what they have, it's still very easy if you just swap in from a mixed diet to a plant-based, that all you're doing is removing the meat. And so if all you were having before was things like pasta, chicken, things like this, with maybe a bit of a jar sauce, and you just remove the chicken, you're not actually then boosting it with the rest of the nutrients. So it is important that people really look to consider a wide range of variety of different vegetables, grains, seeds, etc., within the diet. And in that way, people can improve the nutritional content of the diet, and then de facto they will then in effect support the performances, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense, and I think it's a brilliant point. It's reminded me of being in I was out in North Wales somewhere, and my blender broke, and I went and, you know, first world problems. I went and bought a new one at Argos, and I bought a Nutribullet. And the woman behind the counter said, "Oh, you're going to be really healthy now." And I'm not going to be healthy just because I've bought a Nutribullet, but I get that popular perception. But it's what I put in it, and it's the same with a plant-based diet. If you just suddenly go to eating, I mean, there's a lot of vegan processed food out there. A completely vegan or plant-based diet does not have to be healthy. You know, it can be really very unhealthy. It's what you choose to put in it. And I think you addressed that point brilliantly there.
Well, part of, and again, what I really try to avoid doing is being on a mission or being on a campaign. Again, for me, it's about providing that information for people. But one of the things I would say is, and one of the things I try to provide alternative solutions for, is I see that there's this productization of food. And, you know, industry are always wanting to make money. And you don't make a lot of money by saying to somebody, have more spinach, kale, quinoa, and some tofu. That doesn't make companies a lot of money. What does make people money is by trying to make a product and putting that together in some sort of a food product and selling it to people. I think a great example is with Greggs the Bakers, who've produced their vegan sausage roll. And I remember seeing something on TV where it's possible being one of their biggest sellers all year. I'm not criticizing Greggs, because they're not saying this is a really healthy type of product or anything like that. But your consumer could quite easily think, I'm buying a vegan sausage roll, therefore I'm healthy, if you understand that. And I think that this is one of the things that people do really need to take on board, is that just by cutting out animal products in the diet isn't going to improve the health. In fact, as I was saying before, if I was giving the example where you might have somebody who's on the typical student type of diet, maybe of like a bit of chicken, a bit of pasta sauce and pasta, and you just remove the chicken, you're then removing quite a lot of nutrients that the body can use. And what I've found is that the people who have been vegan for a long time, when I talk to this group of people, they sometimes, I feel, can be misrepresented in the media, because, as you were saying before, they can come across as being a bit polarizing. But they've been so supportive of me trying to put this type of book together, even though, you know, it is possibly a bit of a compromise in some people's minds from lifestyles. What people are saying to me is that this is just helping to facilitate people to make these changes. So I've been getting a lot of support, and I were a bit nervous when I first did the book because I didn't know how the traditional vegan community would respond to something like this. But it's been really positive by saying that, you know, it's helping to provide that information to support people. And it's interesting. I remember when, if you remember when we were up in Harrogate just before the World Championships, Warren, anyway, absolutely chucking it down with rain, and we were having lunch together there. And one of the things that, you know, we could see the influences now, and the restaurant we were in had a really good range of plant-based meals, and they were incredibly tasty. And I don't think that we consciously chose the meals that we did, but they were both sort of plant-based meals, and it was just because the food looked really good.
That was one of the, I think that's possibly the best plant-based curry I've had anywhere. And I have in central London here where we're based, we're only a mile from what's meant to be just about the best plant-based restaurant in the country. And I have to say, the curry that we had up there in Harrogate absolutely outstripped the one a mile down the road. And it was half the price, by the way.
Well, that's the advantage of being up north, Warren. But the next time that you are up north, you'll have to come and stay with me, and we'll do some really good plant based food at my house, because I love cooking.
Oh no, that would be brilliant. And I think that plays what you said about the commoditization of some of these things. So, there's another example, like the Greggs Bakers. There's a vegan donut company that sprung up sort of around London.
And
I was about to say that they're very expensive, they're huge, they're very delicious, they're utterly unhealthy. My dad loves a donut. My dad has no interest in a plant-based diet. He's proper old school, and he still thinks brown bread is a bit suspicious. And so I got him one of these, and he was really impressed. But he did that thing. He said, oh, this is vegan, so I guess it's not got any sugar or anything. He thought it was healthy. I'm like, no, that is as bad as eating an entire bag of Sainsbury's donuts in one go. It's not got healthier. But people want a sort of a product that makes it easy. Now, I get a book is a product, but what you're providing is education, because then it's how do I get across the gap from, okay, I'm interested in trying this, but I'm also concerned about my performance. I don't know where to begin. Yeah. At that point, you can easily be lured down the route of products, which in many cases, Greg's sausage roll, vegan donut, they're not going to help for performance.
No, but again, I think there's a few things. There's the knowledge, and there's the availability, a lot of it is about removing barriers for people. Again, as part of the research that I did for the book, I followed a very strict plant-based diet myself for 3 months, and super, super strict with it. Even the beer that I was drinking, I ensured was fully vegan compliant. That sounds strict.
There are two things we're going to have to pull out of there, just in case anyone's freaked out. Because the first one is we've got an elite performance nutritionist here who just said the word beer, and I can't believe it, Nigel. You're actually living in the real world. That's brilliant. Those boundaries need to be broken. There's nothing wrong with a drink every now and again within the context of what you're doing and your goals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I travel so much with work, and go to Belgium quite a lot with work, for the classics. And Belgium produces some great beers. And again, for me, having an odd beer fits in with my normal sort of healthy lifestyle. I work really hard to keep myself fit and healthy. I have a very busy schedule, but even when I'm away, I'll do at least a 30 to 45 minutes run if I can't get down the gym or go on my bike. And so a little bit of that is just making sure that it fits in and keeps things within a level of normality. Now, if I was a super serious athlete, which is stretching my imagination a bit, but if I was a super serious competitive athlete and I was working for a specific poor performance goal within that period, I probably wouldn't have any beers. But at other times, I'd look at including some of that. So I think you've got to keep it quite real. But I do also think it's important for people who are looking at this journey of being vegan on and plant-based is what choices they want to make. So, when we do talk about beer, and is are people quite comfortable with having some beer that may have been clarified by using finings? And a lot of people will be comfortable with that, but then they might not be comfortable with having some chicken or some dairy or a piece of steak. So I think that's part of the thing where people have got to make the choices themselves. And also, what I am quite uncomfortable with is then when people judge people. So, I've been or in or in the Black Penny Cafe in central London, really nice little cafe, and I was there with my son having breakfast, and there's some people on the table behind us, and the guy says, "Oh, I'll have the Hunter's breakfast." And one of his colleagues said, "Oh, I thought you were vegan." And he said, "Yeah, I was going to have the Hunter's breakfast, but I'm going to ask them not to have the sausage, the bacon, and the egg. So I'll just have a mushroom." And I thought, it's almost a bit of a shame that somebody's got to be sort of sense check with that instead of him going, I have been cutting down my meat a lot, and but this morning, this is just what I'm going to do, and I'm going to fit in with it." Instead, somebody almost like shaming him, "Oh, you said you were vegan, so therefore you shouldn't eat that." People have just got to be making the choices, and I think that we are becoming a little bit better and accommodating in society. And I think that when I was researching for the book, and I followed that really strict vegan program, this were only a couple of years ago, it was so much more difficult to manage when I was traveling. I remember I was flying to Barcelona from Manchester Airport, and literally the only thing that was purely plant-based that I could get to eat in Terminal 3 was either a slice of toast or a plate of chips, and that was all that was available. Whereas now, when I was just looking around the other day, everywhere has got suitable options, absolutely everywhere. So it's just making it much more available for people, making it much easier for people when they are traveling. But when I travel, I don't really like airport food a great deal, so I always take food with me, and I'll often take hummus with me and a few crackers. I love that as a snack when I'm traveling, but you've just got to be careful that it's less than 100 grams, because otherwise you can't get it through security.
And we're back into the first world problems, getting our hummus through security again, aren't we? But I've been there, because I mean, it was only a few years ago. You're absolutely right, and very hard to find suitable plant-based options on the go. And certainly that encouraged me after an initial full tilt at totally plant-based for probably a year, 18 months. I began to relax it to more of a vegetarian angle when traveling, or when visiting friends, because sometimes people just don't know what to cook, but everyone can pretty much knock up something vegetarian. And I realized there was a bit of a pressure on friends who were hosting, and I thought, well, do I feel that strongly about never eating, maybe a bit of cheese or something, that I'm going to make them feel awkward over dinner? And for me personally, no, I don't. I've got no problem with that. So I'd rather they enjoy it. I just wanted to pick up very quickly on two things. One is the non-vegan alcohols. Now, you were talking about finings, was it? Is that the fish swim bladder that's used to clear wine and beer?
That's correct. So I mean, I've not researched it to the nth degree, but basically, I believe it's related to fish scales, which is just basically used to clear some wines and some beers. A lot of your more crafty ales, which tend to be a bit more cloudy, don't have findings in them. And the other thing, again, it just depends on where people sit with it. A lot of the stouts will have lactose, milk sugar in them. So these are small things, but it's people to think about and then make the choices for themselves what they want to be comfortable with and what they don't want to be comfortable with. And I think that that's the key thing for me is people making those choices.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point, and it's also because often that's one that gets a bit of a sort of jaw drop from people. They're like, how can alcohol not be vegan? You're like, well, the ingredients aren't on the bottle, and you don't have to put the ingredients on alcohol. And here's something that could be in a non, certainly not declared as a vegan or plant-based alcohol. And that brings me to the next one quickly, which is just vegan and plant-based. They're terms we've used interchangeably. And I tend to use plant-based because vegan can cause a knee-jerk reaction from people who are against it. It's a bit like mentioning Brexit. It polarizes straight away if it's going to. Whereas plant-based for me is it's the same thing, but it's just the more acceptable, easier going term. How do you see the two terms interchangeably?
Well, I for me, it's almost like a respect as well, in that somebody who is vegan is not only making food choices, but also make other lifestyle choices. So, for example, somebody who's vegan wouldn't be using, like leather in the shoes and things like this, or maybe even beeswax polish. So for me, somebody who's plant-based is people who are eating a diet that is not including animal products within the diet, but they still may look at buying shoes that have got leather, or say they may use beeswax polish, or they might use, as another simple one, a lot of vitamin D products are derived from lanolin from sheep's wool. And so people might you might follow a plant-based diet, but you still might be quite happy to have that. The animal's not being killed or anything for it. So for me, the distinctions is more around a lifestyle to a food choice and a food style.
Got it, got it. No, that really, I think it helps to have a good definition there, because I've always sort of seen it as being around food, but you're right, it can go much broader than that, depending on how far people want to take it. Now, I know you
Yeah,
don't have
and
a.
that's
Oh, sorry, go on.
I'm going to say, and that's why I tend to, when I follow in that real strict plant-based diet, I try to refer to it much more as plant-based, because I wasn't being vegan at the time. I was still using some animal products, but my diet was very strict. But the rest of what I was doing, say, I'd still have leather shoes, and I'd still be using some aspects of. I didn't use. I actually used a vegan vitamin D product at the time as well, actually. So I did go down quite far with that. But I know a lot of people, they'll be quite happy to have a non-vegan vitamin D product.
No. Well, that, I mean, it certainly, that's some serious in-depth research on that, and I think that probably helps give you a context. But I know you don't have a huge amount of time, so I thought as the last thing, what I'd be most interested to have a quick look at is just the idea that what was the thought process that led you to writing this book, and how does that then sit for you within a career of 20 plus years at doing nutrition at the highest levels in sport, number of world tours, Olympic teams, everything else. You said you were a bit concerned about what the vegan community might think. As you're building up to doing it and the thoughts that go into that, did you ever think, well, I wonder what the sort of professional community think? How's it going to sit there? It's interesting. You're worried about the vegan ones first. I don't know if maybe they're a bit more frightening. I'm not sure.
I think it's quite a good question. I mean, because I see myself as a facilitator of information and knowledge, I didn't think that. So, like the athletes I work with would look at me doing something like this quite negatively, and it could be a timing thing because there's so much interest around it. But the actual original inspiration for doing this, and I've always responded to challenges, was about 3 years ago. I was interviewed on a rest day in the Tour de France for GCN. And I'm talking about rest day nutrition. And I mean, this bit clip of video is like, several hundred thousand views on it. So, a lot, this is one of the things when you put information out there these days, it's so can be seen by so many people. And one of the things I was talking about there in with the professional riders was the importance of protein. And all of the examples that I provided were animal-based protein. And there were a couple of critiques that came back saying, well, this is typical. All that people ever talk about is animal protein. What about vegetable protein? And I took that as a really positive critique and challenge. And that made me think a little bit more. And that made me say, okay, well, I'm actually going to research this more. I'm going to then challenge myself and follow this plant-based diet. I'm going to learn more about it so I can be better informed. And it is really interesting because I've then grown as far as my knowledge and my ability as a practitioner has grown. So I now know much more about the quality of the vegetable protein. So, for example, soya. When I were having my training, I was trained to be told that things like soya were actually really quite a poor quality protein, but actually, soya includes all of the essential amino acids. One of the amino acids, which is very popular in sport, leucine, it will provide leucine. It doesn't provide as much as whey protein, but it's how much do we need to get the job done? Do we need 40 grams of whey protein? Is that what's needed? We don't know, possibly, but the vegetable proteins, what I learned was actually they do provide what the body requires. And also then to keep it simple by looking at suggesting combining different vegetable proteins, we're enhancing the mix and the range of amino acids. And also when we're looking at getting these from foods, we're getting the other nutrients that go with the foods as well. So one of the things I try to promote quite a lot is things like mixed grains, and I have simple recipes where we're using things like spelt and quinoa and buckwheat and mixed together with some rice and cooking them all together, so you get really interesting textures and flavors by combining all that together. And with that, we're also getting some good quality protein. So I really feel that that challenge has improved my understanding, my knowledge, and my practice. And what I've had, again, it can be timing, the response that I've had from athletes has been very, very positive. A lot of people have been, a lot of the professional athletes that I work with have been very positive about this and have been asking me more questions because I don't see this as a trend at the moment when we're talking about athletes wanting to reduce or cut out the animal proteins in the diet. I see it very much as a change in the way that people are looking at eating. And the majority of athletes that I'm working with are very much influenced by this, and they are saying to me, how do I cut out this or reduce it, and what are the alternatives?
That, I mean, I think that's so, it's so interesting to hear that part of the journey because I think in any at the high levels of any industry, sport, group, whatever it may be, there can be an element of change slows down or openness to change slows, particularly when you're entering a dominant position in a sport or anything else. Your approach, I think it speaks volumes to, what makes you so good at what you do is the fact that, you took that, and rather than taking it as some narky vegan, which it may well have been, because you know some of them can be like that, and some can be great. But rather than taking it like that, you took it as, no, I'm, well, okay, this is a challenge. Then you immersed yourself. What you come out with is a broader toolkit and a deeper understanding, which helps athletes even more as this move comes along. And it sounds like your book kind of fits exactly into that space, whereby it's as much answering the questions that your elite athletes might have. How can I incorporate more plant-based foods into my diet? Or how can I try and have a more plant-based diet while maintaining performance? Exactly the same way as it would for an amateur athlete.
Yeah, I see the crossover being really the same there. And in some ways, you know, I always think as I said, I keep myself fit, but I don't consider myself an athlete. But there's many people who are not professional athletes who train like a professional athlete, but are working full time, families, etc., etc. And actually, they can be putting more stress on than somebody who's a professional athlete. For some people, they really do train and live like a professional athlete, but for the pure quirk of genetics, they don't have that physical ability to be professional. And actually, so for that group, it's even more difficult to get that blend right.
Well, I think they need to be grabbing a copy of your book and maybe checking out some of those videos you've done on GCN. So we'll put all the links to those in the show notes at the bottom. Nigel, I will absolutely take you up on that cooking offer. We actually have it recorded. Yeah. You said you want to cook some dinner, and I would love to eat some of your food. So that one is done. Thank you so much for making the time. And it was brief, but it was brilliant. Thanks for carving that out of your day.
All right, thanks very much then, Warren.
Great talking with you. Nigel Mitchell, ladies and gentlemen, give that man a great big hand. And if you want to check out his book, then you'll find the links for it in the show notes below, along with, of course, the links for all things 33 Fuel, whether it's our website or our social media. So if you've got any questions, anything for Nigel or for us, or even you want to share anything about your own experiences incorporating plant-based diets or not into your own training, then please do get in touch with us using those links below. So look, thanks very much for joining. Hope you enjoyed that one, and look forward to catching up with you on our next show.